Money FM 89.3, best of prime time. Market View on Money FM 89.3.
Good evening, I'm Chua Tian Tian with your Market View. Now, we've talked a lot about global supply chain disruptions amid the war in Ukraine, how prices for goods have risen sharply across many economies around the world. But apart from rising prices, the global uncertainties also meant food shortages. Most recently, we saw Malaysia restricting chicken exports to Singapore just weeks ago to meet domestic demand. And before that, Indonesia has imposed a palm oil export ban due to shortages in its domestic cooking oil supply. Now, all that has put the importance of food sustainability into the spotlight. Some analysts say investors and researchers, they'll be increasingly focused on feeding a growing global population going forward. An investment in food innovation and agricultural technology will be key. But how should investors go about doing so? For more, we are going to talk more about food sustainability investments today with Christy Tan, investment strategist at Franklin Templeton Institute. Good evening, Ms. Tan.
Hi, Tian Tian.
To get us started, maybe Franklin Templeton released a report, right, saying that the war in Ukraine is a stark reminder of the geopolitical risk in agricultural supply lines. Now, apart from Ukraine, Russia, where are the other vulnerabilities that we are seeing in our supply chain?
Thanks for having me. I think, you know, we first really have to look at the impact from the Ukraine-Russia situation on agricultural supply lines. And, you know, the general assessment that is wide and profound. So firstly, exports from the Black Sea region has been crippled. And this is significant because Russia and Ukraine combined produce 14% of global wheat supplies and 29% of all wheat exports. So they also contribute to 17% of corn exports and nearly 80% of all sunflower oil exports. So prior to the war, 90% of Ukraine's grain and oilseed exports were shipped by sea. And now that avenue has been terminated or diminished, rail and trucking capacity across Ukraine's western border is actually insufficient to move these goods fast enough. And we're looking as well as the rising prices, as you've mentioned, in food and in fertilizer prices. And Russia is one of the world's largest exporters of fertilizers. And together with Belarus, they are major exporters of potash, which is the main source of potassium-based fertilizers. So prices were already on the rise before the conflict and due to the pandemic. And now the war has definitely elevated the supply crunch situation. And if you look at the third channel of vulnerabilities, this is through the commodities complex. Volatile and rising energy prices that's driven food prices higher through rising costs for farmers and agriculture processes. And this is basically means that globally, food production costs have risen significantly. The other channel is shipping and logistics. These problems manifest through labor shortages, closure of Ukrainian ports, and elevated insurance freight premiums. So all the way from Egypt, where bread is a staple, to Malaysia and Indonesia, food protectionism is on the rise, and that basically exposed a lot of vulnerabilities along the current supply lines.
So what does those vulnerabilities then mean for the food industry, and to what extent can industry players be diversifying their supply chain, or should they be doubling down on innovation to ensure resilience instead?
That's a great point, but it's definitely more than that. The Russia-Ukraine situation is another wake-up call to an already brewing global situation of food insecurity. So prior to the war, some of the numbers are really staggering, like close to 193 million people are acutely food insecure, and in 53 countries, they're in need of urgent assistance. So the global pandemic and the Russia-Ukraine conflict has fed fuel to what is now being termed as the hurricane of hunger, and at the same time, increase the urgency to respond, either on the industry and or on the national level. So I think we need to look at it from, you know, with a lens into the future. There are three substantial gaps that need to be addressed to create a sustainable food system to support the rising global population by 2050. So this will be the food gap, the land gap, and the greenhouse gas mitigation gap. So food is no longer a story just about land, water, and weather. It's really a story about technology, innovation, and the future.
In that case, how should countries, how should firms be tapping on innovation and technology, and which areas should they be looking at?
Well, I think, you know, there are definitely a lot of areas, and the global food system, you know, is in need of a huge transformation to feed over 9.3 billion people and more food, like 70% more food than we have today. So the challenge is definitely to address this gap simultaneously and at the same time reducing the significant impact on the environment. So the food system is a very complex system. And I think, you know, that's where the global efforts come into play. That's where a lot of the efforts do require the deployment of huge capital.
You did mention that huge capital is needed for firms, for the private sector to come in. Tell us more about that. What is needed? Do we need equity? Do we need fixed income? Do we need more investments from the private markets?
All that and more, really, Tian. I think, you know, the public is definitely a critical player. And the reason is that, you know, I think the recent COP26 conference, which is basically a huge global initiative, a commitment was signed to deploy over $100 trillion in financing over the next 3 decades. And that is, you know, to move the global economy towards net zero carbon emissions. And, you know, other than that, the food system itself is highly capitalized. It's making up nearly 10% of the global economy. In value terms, it's $8 trillion. But it also generates $12 trillion in negative externalities, ranging from water, air pollution, foodborne diseases, health impacts from, you know, pesticides and fertilizers and all that. So these high stakes mean that the role that private sectors, financial markets, and the role that they play are increasingly important. So there is innovation that's needed, there is financing that's needed, and innovation financing. And, you know, essentially, how do we measure all this and price it? So why is the public and both private market lucrative and necessary at the same time? Because this kind of transition to something that is of a nature positive economy is estimated to generate like $10 trillion in additional business revenue and cost savings. And it's expected to create jobs, like almost 400 million jobs by 2030. And half of these jobs are directly related to the food system.
So, Ms. Tan, talking about the food system, the food industry, right? As we try to put in more investments there, there seems to be lots of companies doing different things, from plant-based food. We have people doing tech and farming to increase that yield. Where should policymakers and banks put their money in? Which particular area of food sustainability in particular?
I think there are opportunities across all geographies and segments of the market. Just highlighting a few examples, I think in terms of regions, you can be looking at the U.S. and there's a productive and sustainable agricultural system that starts with rebuilding healthy soils through nature-positive practices. And, you know, more than $700 billion of financing is needed to scale these agricultural solutions in the U.S. over the long term. And if investors are interested in building well-diversified portfolios, they should look into vertical farming, and I think this is definitely something which, you know, the private equity and venture capital investors have poured money into. But still, you know, this is capital intensive sector, and they will need cheaper and asset backed financing to build farms at a scale large across the globe. Some other opportunities that we're looking at, you know, they're triggered by pressure. So, you know, essentially the some of the grocery chains in Europe, they are stopping, you know, the sale of Brazilian beef. So I think there are opportunities in sustainable beef production, such as digital tracking solutions, carbon neutral beef, carbon market incentives. And I think it's really numerous. And I think that the choices are aplenty. So, yeah, I think investors will definitely, you know, have a field day assessing which investments are actually more attractive.
So we've been talking largely about policymakers, talking about banks and some of the largest investors. But for retail investors, our listeners, if they want to invest in the food industry, which geographical markets in particular, what kind of companies should they be looking into, or what asset classes should they be looking at?
Well, I think the food industry investments is something of a long-term nature. So I think if we look at some of the already established investment instruments like the sustainability linked bonds or the green bonds. These are highly established and quite popular. And, you know, in the other areas, I think there are still a lot of opportunities in the startup scene. So, you know, we're talking about venture capital investing in food tech, agri-tech startup, and there was about nearly $50 billion invested in food tech startups between 2015 to 2019. And this space will continue to grow because startup companies will explore, you know, interesting products, innovative products like lab-grown meat, 3D printed food, etc. The other thing is the mergers and acquisition of food giants. This may not be something of a retail nature, but I think there will be quite a bit of private participation. So that has been delayed or stalled a little bit due to the COVID-19 pandemic. Mm. But, you know, in the North American regions, there's definitely a growing force and investments by private strategic buyers and private equity firms into this area. Well, the other thing is real estate, which is going to be very interesting because we're talking about the real estate and the use of unutilized areas for vertical farming. And, you know, this will happen more in the urban areas. It is an initiative to bring fresh produce in shorter distances to consumers. And this is something which is expected to, you know, vertical farming is expected to reach about $31 billion business by 2030.
Certainly lots of opportunities there. Thank you very much, Ms. Tan. And that was Christy Tan, investment strategist at Franklin Templeton Institute.
Before acting on the information on Money FM, please consider if it's suitable for your own investment objectives, financial situation, and risk tolerance. To listen to more great interviews, download our podcasts at moneyfm893.sg or download our audio app. That's AWEDIO. Available on Google Play or the App Store.